Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of the OES podcast series. I'm your host, Hassan Muslimani, and I lead the carbon management research here at the Institute. And with me today are Andrea Bonzani, who's the International Policy Director at AITA, and Antoine Diemert, who's the ICROA Accreditation and VCM Policy Director, also at AITA. Today, we'll be shedding light on the challenges and opportunities that the voluntary carbon markets face, or what we will be referring to here as the VCM. I'd like to also note that Andrea and Antoine have recently co-authored an article which was published in our Oxford Energy Forum, issue number 138. The issue discusses carbon management and hydrogen solutions for hard-to-abate sectors and was published in December 2023. And the title of the article in focus today is Challenges and Opportunities for Growth in the Voluntary Carbon Market, an Overview. The reason I'm mentioning this is our discussion today will be largely based on that article, so I do encourage our listeners to read it. That, along with other articles in that issue, which I can only describe as very informative and interesting. Timestamp this discussion. We're recording this on the afternoon of March 12th. Andrea and Antoine, thanks for joining us today, and welcome to the OES podcast.
Thanks, Hassan, for having us.
Antoine, perhaps we can start with you. As you did within your article, you provided us with some historical context that will help set the scene for what follows. So how did the VCM historically emerge?
The voluntary carbon market actually emerged quite a while back in the late 90s and early 2000s, which was a market formation and innovation phase at the time. And the objective was to try a new approach to fight climate change. So the idea was to fund projects that reduced or removed greenhouse gas emissions in exchange for a certificate, which we now called a carbon credit or an offset. And that typically represents one metric ton of carbon that is avoided, reduced, or removed from the atmosphere. So that was the idea, and it created a very small market at the time. So we're talking about funds from non-state actors. So that's mainly businesses that had early climate goals and wanted to take responsibility for their emissions voluntarily for various reasons. So some of them really as a way to show leadership in the space, and others responding to pressure, for instance, from various stakeholders. And then in parallel at the time, so back in the late 1990s, governments were adopting the Kyoto Protocol back in 1997, and they were developing their own compliance market mechanisms at the time, such as the Clean Development Mechanism. In that early phase, what we can say is that the market developed initial rules. The first carbon crediting programs were established, developing methodologies, verifying and issuing carbon credits. In the late 90s, names like Plan Vivo, which still exists today, or the Environmental Resources Trust, which was later rebranded as the American Carbon Registry, emerged. And then in the early 2000s, other names very familiar in the market today, such as the Gold Standard Foundation, the Verified Carbon Standard, or the Climate Action Reserve, all emerged at that time. And the VCM has been growing since then, went through a phase of consolidation over the years, and is now a very well established mechanism to fund climate action and fight climate change.
Thanks, Antoine. That is some great scene setting. Andrea, I'll switch to you. So how does the VCM work in practice, and give us an overview perhaps of who's part of this ecosystem?
At the core of the VCM, there are project developers. There are the entities that generate the emission reductions that are then certified. This can happen through a very diverse set of solutions. For example, can be new technology being deployed, such as renewable energy or clean cooking devices. Or another big area is projects around the management of nature. So avoided deforestation, reforestation, enhanced agricultural practices. All these projects get verified by a third-party auditor, verification and validation bodies, as they call in jargon. And with these third-party reports, the crediting program, also called the standards, and these are the entities that Antoine just mentioned, issue carbon credits. And these credits are then generated in a registry, usually managed by the carbon crediting program operator. And once the certificates come to existence, they can be traded like any other intangible goods. And we have an ecosystem that resembles the trading of commodities or financial instruments, that are buyers, sellers, intermediaries such as broker and exchanges. And this is an evolving space. For example, in the last few years, we had the emergence of rating agencies, similar to the ones that operate in the bond market. They assign ratings to individual projects to help market participants understand the features of each specific credit. The buyers of credits are usually corporate who decide to retire these credits. And they do that because they can make a claim. They can claim that they offset some of the emissions in the operations, or they can claim that they supported climate goals more broadly.
Thanks, Andrea. So Antoine had mentioned the role of the VCM as a climate tool. I'm guessing, or my question is, what role does the VCM play in, you know, as part of this climate toolkit, and how does it coexist or interact with regulated carbon markets?
The voluntary carbon market it was created to go above and beyond what was mandated by policy and legislation. So these were initially purely voluntary goals that non-state actors set for themselves, and this carbon market was a way to achieve them. So it can work, it has worked and can work in parallel with regulated carbon markets with minimal interaction. It is also seen as a way to transition from a system where emissions are not priced to one where there are obligations on emitters to pay for the emissions they're responsible for. But also over time, there have been many different ways through which voluntary and compliance market interacted. The main one is the use of carbon credits issued by the crediting programs in the voluntary market. And these credits would then be used in compliance schemes. We have some examples of carbon credits that can be used to offset carbon tax obligations. These are the cases of Colombia, South Africa, and more recently, Chile. Then there's the whole development of Article 6. Within Article 6, it is possible for country to use carbon credits issued in the voluntary market to set up their own Article 6 arrangements. And I think it's key to distinguish between the voluntary use of credits and the market infrastructure that we have called voluntary carbon market, because it was voluntary when it was created. That infrastructure provides a very good way to verify carbon reductions and removals, and then can be used for reasons that go beyond the voluntary retirement. And we see governments increasingly doing that. So the V in VCM is perhaps becoming a misnomer because these markets are not necessarily voluntary anymore.
That's a very interesting comment. And actually, I've heard it from quite a few people. The voluntary carbon is slowly becoming more and more regulated. Antoine, I'll go back to you. And if we were to pinpoint and say, what is the key achievement of the VCM to date? What would that be?
So globally, across all of the carbon crediting programs or standards or registries, depending on how you call them, you can track more or less 5,000 to 6,000 projects globally. So that's a lot of projects. In terms of issuances, so all credits issued across these programs, the total is approaching 2.5 billion credits globally, and half of this total over the last 3 to 4 years. So the market has really picked up lately. Looking at the retirements, so by retirements, we mean when a final user, typically a business, will buy the credit to make a claim, that credit is permanently removed from the registry to avoid issues such as double use, double counting, right? So we talk about the retirement of carbon common credits. And the total there is about slightly over 1 billion credits globally. And again, half of this total over the last 3-4 years as well. So again, reflecting that positive trend in the market. This market is still very small, especially compared to compliance carbon markets. We're looking at a market of about $2 billion overall. So it really is quite niche and still needs to grow if it really wants to make a big difference in the fight against climate change. Prices do vary a lot in this market as well. So it's really hard to tell you know, that's what a credit is worth. You will find that depending on the project, the technology, the region, there can be a big gap in price for the credits. The projects themselves, historically nature-based projects and renewable energy projects, represent the vast majority of retirements and issuances. You're looking at 60 to 80%, let's say, of the market. By nature-based, I mean REDD+, so reduced emissions from deforestation degradation, but also projects in nature restoration, so you know, soil and agriculture projects, afforestation, reforestation project, improved forest management, these types of projects. Energy efficiency is also quite big, I would say, you know, referring here to clean cooking projects, for instance. These are well represented. And then you find projects in all regions globally. So these projects, you know, you can find them in South America, Africa, Asia. These are all regions where projects are developed. It's worth also distinguishing between emission reductions and avoidance and removals. So between projects that avoid and reduce greenhouse gas emissions and those that remove them from the atmosphere, whether it's biological or technological sequestration. And removals clearly are growing, but they're still a minority, with over 80% of issuances and retirements in the market being emission reduction credits. There's a long way to go to develop the removals market. I don't know if it's worth flagging at that point, just in terms of numbers, what the market is planning. There's been a slowdown lately for reasons we'll be talking about. But altogether, we can really say that it's an industry that's planning for significant growth over the next few years. There was research from 2023 that showed that close to 1,500 projects have been developed since 2020, and that investments over the last decade approached almost $40 billion. So again, a lot of that happening over the last 3 to 4 years. So you can say that a new wave of projects is about to come online, and that the market is planning for quite a bit of growth despite all of the challenges that the market is facing at the moment.
This is very interesting. And I think there's potential for a follow-up podcast here. You know, we're talking about emission reductions versus removals. So we'll put a pin in that one. I do want to note, you know, on your $2 billion figure that you did mention, it's very small. And to put that into perspective, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, regulated carbon markets are in the range of $800 to $900 billion today in value. So that is really small. Andrea, I'll shift the discussion into what's happening today now that we have a good overview historically and what's happening in the market. So there's been some growing attention on the VCM, including a fair share of criticism lately, which many of our listeners may already be familiar with. This, of course, started with a standoff between The Guardian and Vera earlier last year, which has brought the market and integrity and legitimacy as a genuine climate tool into question. So what are the critics mostly concerned about?
The criticism that were addressed at the voluntary carbon market recently can be categorized in under three main buckets. The first is related to the perceived shortcomings of some methodologies. The investigation showed that some methodologies were overstating the climate benefits of these projects and therefore were issuing more credits than the actual amount of emissions that they reduced or removed. These criticisms were addressed at very common methodologies such as REDD+, so emissions reduced emission by avoided deforestation, and cook stoves. There is work ongoing to improve these methodologies and address these criticisms. The second bucket was around specific projects that failed to deliver on their promises because of mistakes made by the project developers, operational issues. The credits issued by this project were not considered valid. And the third bucket of criticism was around the legitimacy of the claims that were being made by the buyers of carbon credits. According to some, claiming that you offset your emission should not be done. And the European Union has very recently passed some legislation that significantly reduces the scope of the offsetting claim that can be made by corporates. And a new type of claim is being proposed, the contribution claim. And this is being tested by industry. It's certainly not considered as strong and valuable by corporates compared to an offsetting claim, but it might be one of the direction the market is moving to address this criticism. Overall, some of the criticisms are legitimate, valid, and they need to be taken seriously by industry. Others are more ideologically driven. There are some people that see carbon markets as a big greenwash operation, and they can believe that markets do not deliver climate benefits. We disagree with that, and I think we need to dispel some myths. There has been talks of this imaginary corporation that buys millions of carbon credits to mislead the public and buy the way out of climate action. There is no evidence that corporations behave that way, and there has been a research showing that the companies that buy carbon credits are also the ones that decarbonize their operations faster. And now there are companies that do nothing at all and no one pays attention, whereas those that are trying to do something by using the voluntary market are being criticized in the press and sometimes even sued for trying to do something for the climate. So I think we are in a paradoxical situation now, and the market need to do a lot of work to dispel some of these myths.
Indeed, it seems like there's basically issues with perception at two different levels. There's the perception of the project, the stakeholders that want to buy credits from these projects. And then there's the public perception, the layman, you and I, the individuals who are looking at these companies who are making claims based on these projects. So there's a lot of work to be done indeed on both levels. So my question to Antoine is, how is the market responding, if at all?
Building on what Andrea just mentioned, interestingly, from the, you know, how buyers are responding, there's a lot of, you may have heard the term green hushing. So, you know, we've heard a lot about greenwashing over the years. And now a lot of these corporates are still investing in carbon credits, but they're afraid of what the media is going to say about it. So there's a green hushing phenomenon, which we hope is really just temporary, and that corporates feel really confident to invest in the market. What we can say about how the market is responding is that there's lots underway to build trust, to increase transparency, and to introduce more checks in the system overall. We can look at it from the supply side, demand side, and then you know, in between as well. So on the supply side, you have an initiative called the Integrity Council for the Voluntary Carbon Market, the IECVCM, which is looking to establish the threshold, be the benchmark for high quality carbon credits in the market. And they will release labels called CCP labels, CCP standing for core carbon principles, so credits that meet certain principles. And they're currently looking at standards. They're assessing them against a set of criteria. So that's one thing. And then they will be looking at categories, so types of projects and types of methodologies. And they will be doing checks on at both levels and issuing those labels in the market. So essentially, the idea here is that you want to build trust in the supply in the market, and any credit that has a CCP label can be considered as a high quality carbon credit. So it really makes things easier for a lot of people who are not aware of, you know, the various standards in this market and who just want to find high quality carbon credits. Well, there you go. You will buy a CCP labeled credit in the future, and it means that the credit has met a lot of criteria. The demand side, and that's going back to what Andrea mentioned about claims, there's an initiative called the Voluntary Carbon Market Integrity Initiative that has developed a claims code of practice. And so it's guidance on how to use carbon credits on your net zero pathway credibly. And there will be checks as well. So the VCMI will also be verifying that the claims meet the criteria they've established. So interestingly, you know, this could be the go-to set of guidelines for making claims, but there's been slow uptake, let's say, since the claims code was published at the end of 2023. But let's see what the next few months bring as well on this topic. And then in between, there are many checks that need to be done on the service providers in this market. So I'm talking about the project developers, the brokers, the traders, the consultants that work with corporates to establish the net zero strategies. All we want to be sure we can trust all of the intermediaries that provide very valuable services. And so there is an initiative in AITA called ICRA that is doing specifically this. We deliver an annual accreditation to service providers against the requirements of a code of best practice that is managed by ICRA. So that's a way to build trust and say, you know, you're looking to buy credits or establish your strategy. Well, you can go to these service providers, which have been vetted against a set of criteria. So really with the idea of promoting integrity in the market. Things I think are worth mentioning as well. Lately, there's been a lot of guidance coming out on how to credibly use credits. We can mention ISO, with a standard on carbon neutrality that went live at the end of 2023. So, you know, from establishing a science-aligned strategy all the way to using credits and claiming credits. Oxford as well, with the principles for net zero aligned offsetting, released a couple of weeks ago, really helpful guidance for corporates. And then the Science-Based Target Initiative has released Beyond Value Chain Mitigation Guidance as well, which is also helpful guidance for anyone out there looking to use credits credibly. AITA itself is also about to release published guidelines for the high integrity use of credits that will happen in April. We are trying to find use case for situations where corporates miss their interim targets. They have usually ambitious net zero targets with checks along the way, so these interim or near-term targets. Research that we conducted has shown that a lot of them unfortunately miss these targets, and a way to avoid this situation or to make, you know, up for this situation could be to use credits in order for the business to actually meet its target. So yeah, I think in conclusion, the market is responding fast. I mean, these developments have been happening for the last couple of years already. And I think a lot of businesses are just waiting for more clarity. And all of that is really about to come, I think, over the next few months, definitely in 2024. So there will be a lot to look out for, and starting with those CCP labels coming live to market in April, so very soon.
It's really good to see so much happening on so many different fronts, on supply, on demand. You guys doing a lot of good work. As you mentioned, Oxford Offsetting, they've just published their revised version a couple of weeks ago. So there's a lot of movement happening within the VCM. I'm wondering, the big picture, how does the broader regulatory environment influence and shape the VCM with everything that's happening outside the VCM?
Increasingly, governments want to step in to regulate activities for various reasons. The first examples worth mentioning just around us, you know, being based in Europe, all of the EU directives. So Andrew mentioned the green claims, there's been the empowering consumers directive, the carbon removal certification framework, the corporate sustainability reporting directive. All of these elements, all of the directives are really regulating the use of credits and making it quite stringent for corporates. What it could mean in the end, it could be both positive and negative, because essentially we could end up in a situation where companies can only make claims, so at the company level, with removals that are from the EU, and there's no supply, prices are really high. So I think it's about finding the balance between ensuring integrity and quality in the system, but also making sure that finance can flow to projects that really deliver mitigation today. So I think there's some concerns around the legislation that is currently being developed. It's not all finalized, but remains to be seen if that will be the right direction, especially as we see the emergence of alternative claims that Andrea mentioned that are not compensation or offsetting or carbon neutrality. We really want to make sure that corporates have the opportunity to use whatever credits they want, I believe, in order to fund climate action, which is really what we should all be prioritizing globally. And then outside of Europe, lately, over the last couple of years, in Africa and Asia, we've seen governments stepping in to regulate activities, and typically the share of proceeds, you know, what goes to the government, what's helping the government fund action. So I think here again, it's about finding the right balance between prescription and visibility to create an environment that is incentivizing investments, and that will also, as a consequence, help deliver the country's long-term climate targets, so its NDCs under the Paris Agreement. These announcements, especially in Africa lately, have not really been planned in advance and created concerns about market participants. But overall, we're looking at more and more intervention from regulators in the market, which certainly is a good thing to bring more clarity and build trust as well. And we shouldn't forget that ideally, we shouldn't have a voluntary market, right? It should all be compliance and regulated, but we're far from being on track to delivering the goals of the Paris Agreement, so we're going to need this market for the next few years.
That is very interesting. And my next question was going to be about the outlook for the future. And you've already, both of you have touched upon this. A high level, it's clear that the market has gone through a difficult phase in the past couple of years. Demand has stalled. Prices have all but collapsed. I mean, I recall prices of nature-based solutions at the turn of 2022, averaging around $20 per ton. At the beginning of last year, it was around $8 per ton. And now we're talking about $1 to $2. a ton. And now that we're going into, we're finishing the first quarter of the year, what trends do you see as the year progresses and what could you indicate about the future? Antoine, I'll stick with you and then we'll hear again from Andrea.
There's a more favorable context now, the start of 2024. The trends are a little bit more positive. There's a phase of consolidation. The overall backdrop isn't that favorable. Macroeconomic and geopolitical backdrop really isn't. But it really is difficult to predict the future size of this market. There's been forecasts made over the years, a lot of them missing the target. So it really is difficult to anticipate where the market is going. But I believe one element that Andrew mentioned is, you know, the failure of Article 6 negotiations at COP28 in Dubai at the end of last year could be a boost for the VCM because it sort of is what is currently working and available to various stakeholders out there. So that could really be a way to support the market, but also it is an important mechanism for countries to achieve their NDCs, right? The VCM is a mechanism to help countries deliver the long-term targets. So I would say this is one thing to bear in mind. And then again, going back to the numbers we talked about previously, there's been massive investments lately in this market, and there's more planned in the future. In this report from 2023, I believe it's $3 billion in future investments that are already committed in the VCM. So we're looking at very positive trends and a lot of finance being investing in the market. So you can expect a lot of new projects coming live. And especially in the removal space, I think this increasingly is going to be an area to monitor. And I'm very optimistic, actually, on where the market is going. But there's all the uncertainty linked to, you know, how the market is perceived and all of that that Andrea mentioned. So I'll leave it at that on my side.
Thanks, Antoine. Andrea?
Well, in addition to show my agreement with everything Antoine said, I'd like to add that despite the challenges that we've discussed, the market has shown some resilience. The level of retirements in 2023 was at the same level as retirements in previous years, which was quite surprising considering the amount of criticism that was fired throughout the year. Also, you mentioned prices. The public prices we see are the ones for exchange-traded products, where the buyer does not know what specific credits they will get when they take delivery. Prices on the over-the-counter market, where the buyer can do due diligence and handpick projects that they believe are good quality, have stayed at reasonable levels. And there's a really wide gap between carbon credits that are perceived as good and carbon credits that are perceived as less good. So as the market focuses on quality, buyer confidence will come back. And I remain positive about the future of these markets.
Indeed, it seems as though this year has been a make or break year for the market. And while this might not be the lowest point, historically speaking, that the market has gone through, I hope that in time we'll look back at this time and say this is where things took the biggest turn to the better. We have to be optimistic. Andrea and Antoine, this has been absolutely fascinating. Thank you so much for your insights and time for the benefit of our listeners. And as I mentioned before, Andrea and Antoine's paper is included in our Oxford Energy Forum issue number 138, in case you wish to read it. With that, I'd also like to thank our listeners for tuning in. In case you weren't aware, as part of the carbon management research, which we do here at the Institute, we look closely at carbon markets, both voluntary and compliance. So do look out for our publications. And as always, we welcome your feedback. But most importantly, we look forward to having you on future episodes of this podcast.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as our original research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our energy transition, gas, oil, electricity, or China research programs, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org.